Hi, I'm Billy Shore. Welcome back to Add Passion and Stir. This is the conversation that we love to have about food, passion, and making a difference in the world, and people who are tackling difficult problems with innovative solutions and impacting the way we understand the intersection between food and so many other issues in our lives. I am on today with my sister and the co-founder of Share Our Strength, Debbie Shore, and our guest is Jamila Robinson, relatively new editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit magazine. I think it's been 6 months now, Jamila?
It's been 6 months, and thank you so much for having me, Billy and Debbie. I'm so excited to be on with you.
I feel like you're the perfect guest for this podcast and for this conversation. I've read somewhere you saying, quote, "For me, food is an art form that intersects with every part of life and connects communities," end quote. And that, Jamila, is really just like the heart and soul of what this podcast is about, because we've always believed at Share Our Strength that although we focus on the hunger-related aspects of food and celebrating food in so many ways, because we work with chefs and restaurateurs all around the country, that food is not just about hunger. It intersects with our health in very, you know, profound and direct ways. It intersects with our ability to educate a generation of kids who need to be fed. It intersects with our economy in many ways, and with our environment, and it impacts climate change in terms of the way food is produced and distributed. So your expression there of food being an art form that intersects with every part of life, it just completely resonated with me, and I know with Debbie as well. And this feels like a great conversation.
I was going to say the same thing. And actually, one of the reasons why we started this podcast, Jamila, was really exactly that, was to be able to bring on guests who represent other, you know, other areas of business and professions that have food at the center. So just to, you know, underscore what Billy said, I just, when I read that, I just felt like, God, you totally get exactly who we are.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. It's so important. I really do think of it as an art form that we all participate in, but you really can't talk about food without talking about the economy, without talking about art, without talking about conflict, without talking about music. It really does intersect. And as we try to reach for bringing us closer, food really can be that bridge.
Well, Jamila, let's start at the beginning. I know you've got a kind of a long, for a young person, a long and distinguished career in journalism at the previously at the Enquirer in Philadelphia, and also with USA Today, the Atlantic Journal Constitution, the Detroit Free Press. I just came back from Detroit yesterday, and there's some really exciting things going on in the food world there. But tell us a little bit about where your interest started. Did food come first or journalism come first? And when did their paths cross?
Oh, journalism came first. Absolutely. Journalism is the only thing I ever wanted to do. I knew when I was maybe 9 or 10 that I wanted to be a journalist, but I wanted to write about music. I wanted to be a classical music critic, and spent a lot of time not only studying music, but also studying journalism. It was the first and foremost. I didn't want to be a performer. I wanted to write about why symphonies mattered. But in my first internship at the Detroit Free Press, in my hometown, so I'm glad to hear you talking about my hometown, because there are some very exciting things happening there.
I should just tell you about your hometown, because I had lunch with Mayor Mike Duggan when I was there. And, you know, the town is really just kind of completely transformed itself from, you know, a bankruptcy that was, you know, very impactful in a negative way in 2013. And now unemployment is down from 20% to less than 7%. People are moving back into the city. Abandoned houses are being repaired and moved into. And the food scene is just amazing. We were at Eastern Market, which is a vibrant food scene and an incubator for all kinds of different food ideas and businesses. And I just came away from Detroit so inspired. And they've also got coming up in just a couple of weeks, the NFL draft, which is going to bring.
NFL draft is coming to Detroit. And I always love to encourage people to really, you know, what you know about Detroit is probably not what you should know about Detroit, an incredible art scene. The most Van Gogh you're ever going to see in the world at the Detroit Institute of Arts, but this incredible food scene. I'm so glad to hear you talking about Eastern Market, this vibrant. It's one of the places that I became inspired by food, by going to the Eastern Market with my grandmother every single weekend for fresh produce, being able to know, you know, what, you know, corn is supposed to be like in July and August, and tomatoes and our cherries from Michigan. There's no other place like it. But when I was at the Free Press as an intern, I was a copy editor and page designer. And one of the sections that I had to work on was the food section. And I really learned at that moment how important it is, the way we use language, and how you can be so expressive with food. And the storytelling that was coming out of the food section was so interesting. And I found it to be as inspiring as the music that I was studying. And I found that you can, when you ask someone how their family cooks rice, or what is a familiar smell or taste that you want, that that brings you close to yourself, you find that people will tell you everything because they have those memories and they have that connection, or it takes them to a place where they feel joy and inspiration. And so it was something that I knew very early on that I wanted to continue to pursue, that food is entertainment, it's art, it's storytelling. And that became a real pillar for my career, to always have food as part of my portfolio, along with music and art and books and all of the other art forms.
And what a way to weave that into, I'm guessing, into the magazine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you'll see in the pages of Bon Appetit that you're going to find more of that culture and the those expressions of culture, because you really can't have food without talking about sports. You can't have food without talking about museums. When you travel, being at a restaurant and going to those destinations is so vital to that entire experience, whether you are driving 4 hours away or you are traveling across to the other side of the globe, you're going to have to feed yourself and understand the culture and the food ways of those communities. So bringing that into the pages of Bon Appetit in a more dynamic way, I think, is a really important way to start to build, not only to build audiences, but to extend those experiences to people who may not live in those communities, and also encourage people who are writing those stories to share experiences in communities they don't live in.
Yeah, I love that, and it also feels like no other magazine, no other food magazine, really would do that. So you're just bringing so much of your personal experience and your passion into the magazine, which is so cool.
Well, thank you for saying that. I was always one of those editors who, I tried to resist the things that I was very passionate about, because otherwise you would only have a book filled with, you know, art and figure skating. But I'm very curious about how other people experience food and how food drives culture for other people. And that curiosity allows for other people to feel seen. And so it also changes the way that we approach stories. It's not from a place of discovery, but it is in a place of conversation. It is an invitation and a welcoming that I think is important, especially in food media, for us to encourage. We like to talk about how food brings us together, but there are ways that food can keep us apart as well, because it is that lack of connection we have with other people. And so I like to encourage that and make sure that there is always an invitation for people to share their stories with us, and not just for us to go and say, here are the best, these are the 10 restaurants, and here's everything you should eat, but here are ways that you can experience culture by us listening to other people and the ways that they want to share their culture.
Jamila, say a little more about food keeping us apart. I hadn't heard that perspective before, and I think I know what you mean, but I would love to hear you talk about it.
Well, I think a lot about the ways that especially in the last few years, of who gets to cook what. And these ideas of, well, I'm from Michigan, but I grew up eating Middle Eastern food. Who gets to cook Middle Eastern food? And that appreciation of Middle Eastern culture, or being able to cook a wonderful tadig that I'm still trying to perfect, is something. It is an appreciation of culture and wanting to be sure that I can express my interest in these kinds of food ways, or that all food should come from a lens that is French, or French Italian, or sometimes Japanese. As we think about culture and the ways that food waste change when you bring people together, if we can talk about it in a way that is appreciative, we can close the distance. When we think about how we produce, as I was mentioning before, sometimes food waste can come at a point of discovery and not a point of connection. And I like to be sure that food is a connective experience and a cultural experience.
It seems like so many things lend itself to it being that, but then there's also some of these obstacles. Jamila, before I turn this back to my sister, tell us how did you and Bon Appetit find each other? Was that a surprise? Was that something that was on your radar screen? How did it come about?
Oh my gosh. It's funny. I applied the last time this job was open, I was a finalist for the role. And really, really, really wanted the job. And I wrote this long business plan about what I wanted to bring to the brand, all of my ideas, all of the things I wanted to do in video. And I did not get the job. And I was a little bit, surprised is the wrong word. I was, because I think that different things have, you know, we love to say things happen for a reason, but I think my predecessor, Don Davis, was the right person for that role at the right time. And I totally understood why she got the job and I didn't, but I really wanted it. And I wanted to support her as much as possible. So when it came around again, when Don decided she wanted to go back to the publishing industry, I was at a point where I thought, well, you know, I tried that a few years ago. I have all of these other things that I'm interested in. I want to write some books. And I got a call from Anna Wintour, who said, I think you should apply for this role. And I had to think about it for a couple of days. And then I came to the conclusion, Anna Wintour loves to say, sometimes she'll say, she'll ask me about my opinion of something. And sometimes she'll say, don't you agree? And 99% of the time I agree. and she says, oh, this would be a great role for you. Don't you agree? And I agreed with her. Yes, I would. It would be a great role for me. And so I went back to the drawing board and thought about what are all the things that my skills, my talent, my experience, my connections all over the world, my work with World's 50 Best Restaurants, my work as the journalism chair for the James Beard Foundation, how would that influence the future of Bon Appetit and Epicurious? And then it was a no-brainer. I got to think about what I wanted to bring 3 years earlier weren't the right things for 3 years later or 3 years down the line. So I really wanted to think about what is it that I would love for Bon Appetit and Epicurious to be in 2027, in 2029, in 2030. And that was the trajectory that I put together. And here I am. I'm so grateful to be here. It is a great company to work for, with being just some of the most creative brains on the planet. The way that the company, I really believe, We like to think of, you know, being at the center of cultural moments and creating cultural moments. And that comes from having such an incredible staff of extraordinarily brilliant people. I'm very fortunate to be in their company.
Pivoting just a little bit away from that, I wanted to ask you a question about something I read during COVID. It was such a reset moment, obviously, in every way, upending everything in our world. And you wrote early on that during the pandemic, the restaurants and the industry professionals needed to rethink everything, from like labor practices to hiring, how journalists were talking about restaurants and covering restaurants, and really about building a more sustainable, equitable system. And I'm wondering if you feel like progress has been made around that, and if so, in what areas specifically?
I think a lot of progress has been made, but I don't think that we talk about it and write about it as much as we should. I think one of the most interesting things that's happening in so many parts of the industry are not necessarily being shown in the U.S. or is happening as fast. One of the things that I think is such an important trend is the way in South America, in Asia, in a lot of parts of Europe, especially in the southern parts of Europe, the most important chefs are women. They are winning all of the accolades. They are winning the Michelin stars. And there's an extreme amount of investment that's happening for women in other parts of the world. And I think that that's something that we can learn from in the U.S. But we aren't writing about, because media organizations don't cover what's happening in the industry across the globe as much, so you don't see that. But Marcus Samuelson, for example, has been doing these collaborations just with women chefs. So you're starting to see this progress. The ways that chefs are collaborating and learning from each other, that's something that's happening all over the world and all over the U.S. as well. You'll see these collaboration dinners, these pop-ups. And that is a chance for chefs to continue their education, to learn from each other, for us to bring people closer together. And I think that those are, it's so important, but we are just not seeing as much of that. And I think the way that we cover, that journalists cover the industry, I got a lot of attention at the Philadelphia Inquirer for my work with the critic Craig Laban of getting rid of stars, because I don't really believe in them. I don't really, I think Michelin stars, that's an award and there's a certain criteria for the award, but I don't necessarily think media organizations, I don't think it makes as much sense, because our relationship with stars has changed so much. If I get into a rideshare, I'm going to give the driver 5 stars. I got there 5 stars. They give me stars. Amazon, the stars are all over the place. And in some companies give us stars. So if the New York Times gives a restaurant 4 stars and we give it 3, or the other way around, who's right? And who gets to decide? And so I think changing that as that relationship with stars has changed, our relationship with the way we use that as a measure of success also has to change. I would rather say that this restaurant is the best experience you'll get from cocktail to dessert. And I would rather use very specific language to describe a restaurant experience. This is once in a lifetime. This is a classic restaurant that the menu is a stalwart that hasn't changed in 50 years, and it's important to have this kind of experience. This restaurant is innovative for the way that they are only using plant-based ingredients. I would rather use that kind of language than to drill it down to 3 stars or 4 stars or 5 stars, depending on where you are, when language, I think, is a better way of conveying how we want people to perceive perceive a restaurant. And I think it's important that we, anything of the pre-pandemic world, we very much need to re-examine and ask ourselves, what's the most radical thing we can do to make sure that progress continues?
Jamila, in terms of what you were saying about women around the world, what do you think is driving that beyond just the time has come?
I think there is a respect for the craft, and that women are, you know, most people learn, a lot of people learn how to cook from their mothers and grandmothers. And we talk about that quite a bit. But I think around the world, there is just a respect for chefs in general, because of the way it's thought of as a profession, that the way that a lot of countries have health care and child care and make it a lot easier, that and allows for women to be in the profession. So I think, and also I think in somebody like Janaia Torres in Brazil, who was just named the world's best female chef, her ideas are really about community and feeding people. A lot of the things that we want to see in the world, and a lot of people are attracted to that and want to see more of that. So I think you start to see so many people building community around that idea, and the women who support it and support each other in the business. I think it's so important.
While we're on the global question, I'm wondering where in the world you have not been that you would like to go and try the cuisine. I read about your time in Mexico, I think, looking for, was it vanilla beans?
Oh, looking for vanilla beans.
Yeah. I've spent a ton of time in Mexico and love the food there. But yeah, I've recently been going to India for work, and I've been, you know, just like blown away by all the flavors there. There's so much to try in the world, but where for you are you most interested?
I would say India. In fact, I got a lot of craft recently at the Asia's 50 Best Restaurant Awards, because our academy chairs in India have said, you haven't been to India. How is it that you haven't been to India? You have to come to India.
Jamila, I'll invite you next time I go.
I think it's a good idea.
Yes.
And I love that. I love that. I love Indian food. I love the difference in cultures from the Kerala cuisine and what is different from, you know, I love finding about the differences in regional cuisine. So I'm very interested in India. I'm very interested in the global South. And I'm fortunate. I have been to a lot of places in the world, and being part of the World's 50 Best cohort does allow me to go to a lot of places and eat things. But I'm very interested in the global South. I'm very interested in indigenous cuisines. I'm very interested in the ways that we can use the ways that people have cooked for thousands of years as a way to address climate. So I'm very interested in cuisines that have this, you know, that we could, as we think about the Mediterranean diet as being very healthful and an important food way. And I'm very interested in understanding how the Atlantic forest can also be a way of eating that allows us to rebuild the forest. So I'm very interested in global, not only global cuisine, but sustainability in cuisine.
But you're really talking about what for us is kind of our sweet spot, Jamila, which is the role that chefs and restaurants can play in changing the world, in advancing social justice, in addressing hunger, and addressing climate. You must see this in lots of different forms and manifestations, but you know, on the one hand, chefs have a day job, which is to cook, and restaurateurs do, and that's not an easy job to begin with. On the other hand, they often have a platform now and an interest in all of the issues related to food. Tell us a little bit about what you think the opportunity there is for chefs and restaurants in the culinary community to be advancing social change.
Sure. I mean, I do think it's important that we think about where our food comes from, who's producing it, and the impact that it might have on our environment. I think in America, we've become very comfortable with having different kinds of foods all year round, and not considering whether or not this is the right time of year for salmon, or is this the right time of year for lobster? Do we put stress on the supply chain? And so I think that as chefs are constantly talking about having a seasonal menu, cooking things in season, but having that platform to express that it's okay if we don't have tomatoes in February, that we think it's important to make sure that we have those in July and August when they are at their peak, not only the peak for the season, but the peak of deliciousness. We don't have to have, I hate to pick on caviar because it's kind of, but you know, there, we have this ease of having, we have access to so many ingredients. And I think when chefs push back a little bit and say, well, you know, maybe, you know, there aren't enough ducks this year, so we are going to have a different poultry, or we don't have, we don't have the right supply of this important ingredient, so we're going to change our menu. And I think it's important for chefs to be just to be open about that. And I think for food media, it's important for us to discuss that there may not, you know, if there was a few, couple of years ago, there was an avian flu, and we often talk about the price of poultry during, especially around November. Oh, this is going to go up, but we don't step back and look at, well, you know, sometimes because of the cost of labor, the cost of real estate, sometimes our food needs to cost more. And I think we can be in partnership and we can be in community as journalists, as chefs, as restaurateurs, to talk about the challenges of why things may cost so much. I think sometimes we give chefs a lot of grief for, you know, a tasting menu that might cost a couple hundred dollars a plate or a couple hundred dollars a person, when we're not taking into consideration the labor, the skill, the real estate, the supply chain, the ingredients that require that tasting menu, that experience to cost what it does. So maybe we don't have as many. And I think we have to help chefs and restaurateurs communicate that. And also we have to be open with our readers and our audiences about why some things may cost more, and giving a better life cycle of cost, of climate, of impact, and ways that we can invite people into that conversation.
It sounds like what we're talking about right now must be connected to your goals for the magazine. I mean, you've talked about the role that the magazine can play. Say a little bit about the goals for Bon Appetit. And I think the most recent issue is the one that is the first issue with your kind of imprint all over it. And it's got Chicago hot dogs on the cover. And tell us how that came about.
I love that cover. I guess it's the March issue. With a big happy hot dog.
That was that Philly sweet spot right there.
I love that hot dog. It really demonstrates that Bon Appetit can be everything from hot dogs to haute cuisine. That there are experiences and beauty in every piece of food, whether it's a hot dog or if it's an 11 course tasting menu at a destination far, far away. All of those experiences matter. They impact our lives in different ways. And that hot dog is part of a feature we call Best in Town. And we have a local expert, a writer, a chef tell us about what are the best dishes in their city. So we have these wonderful 8 Chicago hot dogs, and I love a hot dog. It's one of my favorite things. I love a grilled hot dog with, you know, a nice crispy little slightly burnt edge on a toasted bun. And I love this poppy seed hot dog and that sausage and those bright pickles and those perfectly brunoise onions. And I just thought it was such a sexy hot dog.
Are you ketchup or mustard on your hot dog?
I am both. I am both.
I've never understood that mix.
you get the sweet and the acidic with the mustard. But I think you have to have them all. But I have to have a dill pickle on my hot dogs. But that was a we had all of these photos and things that could have gone on the cover. And this was shot by a photographer in Chicago. And I looked at that hot dog and I said, I think that's the cover image. And, you know, and there were questions, can we put a hot dog on the cover of Bon Appetit? And my question is that it is why not? It's that beautiful poppy seed bun. All of this, it's a gorgeous hot dog, that beautiful bright blue background. And it just seemed like that, what is the thing that's going to catch your eye? And that hot dog was it, but it also represents that, you know, a hot dog can be a very sophisticated thing and it's accessible. Everybody loves a hot dog or a sandwich. And that I think was hands down the best photo that I saw. And I thought, let's try it on the cover. And we got a tremendous response from audiences on Instagram. People sent us letters. They asked the photographer for the photo. People in Chicago felt as if, oh yes, you know, people think about Chicago and pizza when it's really for them, the hot dog is just as important as the pizza and it is theirs. So it was a great way to share a piece of a different lens of the Midwest, but also signal that Bon Appetit is food culture for everyone.
Well, hey, last thing from me, and if you feel like this will get you in trouble, don't say it, but just wondering, since you're in DC, if you've discovered any little hole in the wall restaurant that maybe, you know, our listeners never heard of that you would like to just say, like,
oh my gosh, I can shout out a couple of really great places in DC. Haraya, a really great new Filipino cafe. One of my favorite restaurants is Maketo for its Cambodian Taiwanese.
Big supporter of ours. Yeah,
oh my gosh, I love that. Love that restaurant. I think Pluma, the bakery near Union Market, is just absolutely delightful. So many great restaurants. My favorite restaurant is called Bresca. It's on 14th Street. Wonderful, wonderful new American bistro, one of the best restaurants, and Albi for Michael Raffiti's Lebanese cooking. I'm from Detroit, one of the largest Middle Eastern populations outside the Middle East. Michael Raffiti's restaurant is where I go for that comfort.
I know we need to wrap up, but congrats again on being in this role. It's such an exciting opportunity. And as you were telling your story about, you know, applying once for the job and not getting it, I just think that's such an important lesson for so many people who are at whatever point they are in their career. I know young people in particular always feel like your career is supposed to go in a straight line of unbroken success. And, you know, it's success is not linear. I have found that there's lots of zigs and zags.
Embrace the curves, embrace the zigzags, embrace, you know, progressing comes from not getting everything you want. Life just doesn't work that way. And you learn so much from the things that you don't have and the things that you, so Bob Magruder, who was the managing editor of the Detroit Free Press, one of my first bosses, probably one of the best ones, rest in peace to him. He said, opportunities don't knock on your own personal timeline. And I think it's so important to remember that our timeline you can make your own luck, but you may not make your own timeline. And the things that happen, they come back around. Those opportunities, you have to just be able to seize them. And it's okay if it doesn't work out the first time, because you might get that opportunity 6 or 7 years down the line, and it'll be much greater.
Well, that's awesome advice to end on. I can't wait to see what's on the next cover. I can't wait to see what's on all the future covers of Bon Appetit magazine.
We are in the travel issue now. That's on newsstands now. We have some incredible destinations and a great sense of place of why we travel for food. And then upcoming in May, it'll be our first drinks issue in 50 years with a great look at where we drink, why we drink, and all the culture that comes around the beverage landscape. Very exciting time at Bon Appetit.
Well, you know, Debbie and I have always thought we had the best jobs in the world, particularly the best jobs in the world as they relate to food. But you're giving us a pretty good run for our money, I would say.
I think we've got great jobs. We can put our jobs together and have some more fun.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We've been talking to Jamila Robinson, the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit magazine, and somebody who's known and been involved with Share Our Strength for a long time, going back to her days at USA Today. On behalf of my sister, Debbie Shore, and myself and our team at Share Our Strength and our producers at District Productive, Paul Woodall, thanks so much for listening to this episode. We've got all of our episodes that you can find at adpassionandstir.com. Amazing chefs, restaurateurs, elected officials, activists. I think you'll enjoy our archive, and you can rate us and rank us and share it with your friends. So thanks so much for listening. I'm Billy Shore.